لبيك يا تواب يا فتاح يا عليم لبيك يا وهاب يا رزاق يا
بسم الله والحمد لله وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد رسول الله. All praise and thanks is due to Allah. May Allah the Almighty increase the honor and raise the rank of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, his noble relatives and companions.
لبيك يا تواب يا فتاح يا لبيك يا وهاب يا رزاق يا كريم.
I'd like to extend an incredibly huge welcome to all our listeners near and far who have tuned in to the Muslim Community Radio on 92.1 FM.
رزاق يا كريم.
Joining you from the Tum FM studio on the first episode, the first installment of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah is Nadia. And I'm not alone today. In fact, I have my very special co-host who's been away for quite some time. And I'm sure you will be so excited to hear from her today. She is Ola. Ola, I'd like to immensely welcome you back to the studios of Tum FM Muslim Community Radio. I look forward to hearing from you.
Barakallahu fiki, Nadia. It's I'm truly overwhelmed by your sweet words, and it's good to be back. What can I say?
Absolutely. It's going to take you some time to get back into the rhythm of presenting, especially for me. It's been quite some time, but I can't imagine for you. It's been, what, 2 years?
Yeah, it's probably about 2 years since I was last on air. So there might be some hitches and glitches along the way. But I'm sure our listeners will be a little forgiving when it comes to me learning the ropes once again.
Nevertheless, I'm sure all our listeners are absolutely amazed and excited to hear from you once again. I'm really feeling the excitement, especially as we are approaching a very exciting time of the year. As we know, Dhul Hijjah is approaching, and it's a time when the largest annual pilgrimage happens. So there's so much happening during this time of year, especially for those who are about to undertake this important obligation.
True, and a lot of reminiscing, I guess, is happening at this point in time for people who already have performed Hajj previously and they know what an experience it is. And it's something that, you know, they wish they could do again and again and again. So this is a time which is filled with excitement for those who are performing Hajj for the first time this year, and also a very emotional time for those who have been before and are probably not so fortunate to return once again. So
yep.
We ask Allah that He facilitates for us a return to those holy lands if you have been before, and to facilitate for those who hope to perform Hajj for the first time as well, to fulfill their dua.
Absolutely. I'm sure you are one of those people who are longing to go back to those blessed lands of Mecca and Medina and revisit and relive those experiences that you had when you were about 13 years of age.
13 years old.
MashaAllah.
I'm not going to say how long ago that was. But yes, I was very young, and it was one of the most unexpected and yet unforgettable experiences I've ever had in my life.
I can imagine. And I am hopeful that bi-ithnillahi ta'ala in the next coming years, I will be among those lucky and fortunate ones to be undertaking that very important obligation, Many Muslims, in fact thousands of Muslims, not just in Australia but worldwide, are preparing for the spiritual trip of a lifetime to fulfill pilgrimage. And we have agreed to start this very, very significant installment today to hopefully give people a perspective on what Hajj is all about. There are some common questions that many people have lingering in the back of their minds about the integrals of Hajj, the requisites, the obligation.
Basically what it involves.
Exactly, and some of the myths and misconceptions surrounding this great obligation. So I think, you know, for both of us, it's a great opportunity to, I guess, recall some of that important information that we might have forgotten, and equally allow our listeners to learn more about this great obligation.
It'll be a bit of a mental tour for many people as they kind of imagine what these rituals would consist of.
Absolutely. We'll take a short break and we'll let you know exactly what's happening on the show. Welcome back, dear listeners. I'm sure listening to that wonderful chant is helping those who have been to Hajj before. I guess it's a chance for them to reminisce and to recall that very significant time of their life. Today's episode, bi'ithnillahi ta'ala, as we mentioned, it's the debut episode of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, and it will be focusing on giving an overview of Hajj and its integrals, as well as giving our listeners some handy hints and tips on how to prepare and what to precisely prepare for the trip of a lifetime.
Of course, we all know that a certain degree of preparation needs to go into taking any trip, but this is the trip of a lifetime.
Yes.
It takes just that little bit more preparation, both on a physical level, a spiritual level, and an emotional level, I guess.
Absolutely. I'm sure they've prepared themselves financially, because if that wasn't the case, they wouldn't be embarking or about to embark on that journey.
That's right.
But there's also a lot more than the financial aspect of preparing for Hajj, and that includes, as you mentioned, the mental preparation, the spiritual preparation, as well as physically. This can be very physically challenging on the person, and even if you are one of the fittest people amongst the community or in the community, you Yes. still need to prepare yourself properly by exercising well and make sure that you are eating the right kinds of food.
Especially because people will be traveling to a country where temperatures are known to be very, very high. It's something that a lot of people may not be accustomed to. So you need to be mentally prepared for that as well.
Absolutely.
But I'm one of those people, Nadia, I'm sure you know by now, me and heat do not agree whatsoever. Yep. So it was a huge shock for my system to experience that much heat. So there are certain challenges that you need to overcome physically because of that heat. Even if you are normally a very fit person and you do go about your daily activities without any trouble, going to an area where there's such high heat, it could, you know, shock your system.
Absolutely. And that's why it's really significant to prepare yourself physically for that. There is a lot of physically daunting activities such as walking that you, you know, must be doing. So there is definitely a lot of information to absorb and there is a lot of planning that you need to do. So this can be very, very overwhelming for that person. So inshallah, we will make life easier for you in helping you to prepare for your trip of a lifetime. A short break, dear listeners, and we shall return. Stay tuned.
Ya Layli, Ya Layli.
Lele, 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 lele,
Dhul-Hijjah, the final month of the lunar year, the month of Hajj for Muslims from far and near.
A time to fulfill a once-in-a-lifetime obligation and distance yourself from worldly temptation.
In the city where hearts are drawn to the Green Dome, a place we all wish we could call home.
At the grave of the one to whom belongs the major intercession, you stand in humility and great veneration.
In Mecca awaits another magnificent sight. To one's eyes, the holy Kaaba brings much delight.
When pilgrims flock to Mount Arafat, it's to fulfill the greatest integral of Hajj, in fact.
Upon leaving Arafat and heading to Muzdalifah, together in harmony, pilgrims repeat the talbiyah.
On the evening of Eid, to Mina the pilgrims go. The next day, at the three jamarat, pebbles they will throw.
Returning to the Haram, they perform wudu at the Zamzam well before performing tawaf around the Kaaba to bid farewell.
About these practices, more you'll find out and know by joining us on Reconnecting in Dhul-Hijjah on 2M FM Radio.
لبيك اللهم لبيك لبيك لا شريك لك لبيك إن الحمد والنعمة لك والملك لا شريك لك
ودي لي سلامي يا رايح للحرم ودعي لي وسلم لي على شمس الأمم
وديني سلامي يا رايح للحرم ودعيلي وسلم لي على شمس الأمم وديني سلامي يا رايح للحرم ودعيلي وسلم لي على شمس الأمم انظر للكعبة يا محلاها.
Welcome back to episode 1 of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah with Nadia and Ola. In just a few days, around 2 million Muslims of every ethnic group, color, social status, and culture from around the world will embark on a spiritual journey of a lifetime to Mecca to perform pilgrimage.
They will circumambulate Islam's most sacred site, the Holy Kaaba, in the holy city of Mecca, and take part in a series of rituals intended to bring about greater humility and unity among Muslims.
So to give you a sense of what it entails, we assembled the answers to the common questions pertaining to what Hajj is, its rituals, and its spiritual significance.
So, what does Hajj mean? To perform Hajj means to go to the Kaaba at a particular time with the intention to perform there the specific known actions which Allah ordered to be done in performing this worship.
So, who must perform Hajj? Performing Hajj and Umrah once in a lifetime becomes obligatory upon the Muslim when he is free, accountable, and can afford to reach Mecca and return to his home place. What this includes is that one has in excess of one's debts, appropriate lodging and clothing, and what one is obligated to spend on those whom one must support from one's departure until one's return. Allah Azza wa Jal said in Surah Al-Baqarah, Ayah 196, وَأَتِمُّ الْحَجَّ وَالْعُمْرَةَ لِلَّهِ. This verse means, perform Hajj and Umrah completely in obedience to Allah.
The next commonly asked question is, when is Hajj? So a lot of people often wonder, can Hajj be performed during any time of the year? The answer is simply no. Pilgrimage can only take place during the month of Dhul Hijjah, the last month of the Islamic calendar.
The next question is very important, especially for those who wish to perform Hajj and Umrah, and that's in relation to the integrals. We'll start off by talking about the main integrals of Hajj. Firstly, Hajj has six integrals, which are those matters which must be performed for Hajj to be valid, and which, if not performed, cannot be replaced or corrected for by slaughtering. Some of these integrals have a very specific and limited time frame to perform them in, so if one misses performing them in their time, one's Hajj is invalid and one cannot do anything to make it valid. These integrals are 2, the intention and physical presence in Arafat. 3 others are due upon him and his Hajj is not complete until he does them. These are Tawaf, Sa'i, and shaving the head or trimming the hair. Number 1, to have the intention, to be in the state of pilgrimage, which is called ihram. So one says in one's heart, for example, I now enter into the actions of Hajj for the sake of Allah. Number two, to be at Arafah, even for a moment between the start of Dhuhr on the 9th of Dhul Hijjah and the dawn of the following day. Number three, to circumambulate the Kaaba 7 times, making sure that the Kaaba is on one's left side, starting with the black stone. It's a condition for one to be clear of both ritual impurities. Number four, to walk between the mounts of As-Safa and Al-Marwa 7 times. It's not a condition for one to be in the state of purification. However, one must start with As-Safa and end at Al-Marwa. Number five, shaving or trimming the hair. This is satisfied by cutting at least 3 hairs. The women trim, but they do not shave. Number six, the order in most integrals. To do this, one circumambulates the Kaaba first. One must delay shaving or trimming and the obligatory circumambulation until after standing in Arafah.
الصادق المأمون أكرم مرسل مرسل ومتع الأحداق.
The integrals of Umrah are 5. The first is to have the intention. One intends in one's heart, for example, I now intend to perform Umrah for the sake of Allah while being in the state of ihram. Number two is to circumambulate the Kaaba, tawaf. Number three is to walk between the Safa and Marwa, called sa'i. Number four is shaving or trimming the hair, halq or taqsir. And number five is keeping all the integrals in order, as they were mentioned.
So we mentioned briefly about the integrals of Hajj and Umrah, and now we will talk about the requisites of Hajj. Hajj has 5 requisites, which, as you know, are the obligatory actions which must be performed for Hajj. However, unlike the integral, leaving out a requisite does not invalidate Hajj. Rather, the person is sinful and an expiation is due on him. The expiation due for not performing any of these requisites is to slaughter a sheep and distribute its meat to the poor people in Mecca, or if you're unable to do that, to fast 10 days, 3 while in Hajj and 7 after returning to one's hometown. So what are those requisites? Allah will tell you.
So among the requisites of Hajj, number one is to have the intention of ihram before crossing the site prescribed for it, which is referred to as the miqat. Number two is to throw 70 pebbles at the 3 stations known as jamaras, as jamara al-sughra, al-wusta and al-aqaba. The third requisite is to stay at night in Muzdalifah, a place close to Arafah from which the pebbles are picked for throwing. The fourth requisite is to stay at night in Mina, a place between Mecca and Arafah, but it is closer to Mecca. And the fifth and final requisite is to perform the farewell circumambulation. If one leaves one of the requisites, one is obligated to slaughter a sheep. The one who is unable must fast 10 days, 3 of which while in Hajj, and 7 when one returns home.
And there you go, dear listeners. Hopefully for those who are about to embark on a journey of a lifetime, hopefully bi-ithnillahi ta'ala, that worked as a way to refresh their memory about the integrals, the requisites, and some of the obvious expiations that are due on those who did not fulfill them.
Obviously, this is just simply an overview, very, very basic. And for those who are wishing to embark on this trip to perform this obligation, you would need to find out further details from a trustworthy source.
Absolutely, Ola. And inshallah, as we start talking about the way in which to prepare oneself for Hajj, one of the most important elements is to prepare themselves religiously with the Islamic knowledge. So equipping themselves with the knowledge pertaining to how to perform Hajj is one of the most important elements when preparing oneself to perform this great and noble obligation.
Of course, it can all mean the difference between your Hajj being valid or invalid.
Absolutely.
And after crossing that many miles, and, you know,
paying thousands and thousands of dollars.
Exactly. You would want to ensure, apart from the other things that, you know, you can, you would have to, the other consequences of not having your Hajj being valid.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a costly experience if you go there not knowing what to do and you fall into, you know, any of these sins or invalidators of Hajj. That, you know, you can come back and feel like you've done nothing, you've achieved nothing.
Exactly. So that's what we will be talking about, in addition to how to prepare the body, the heart and soul for the journey to Hajj. So do stay tuned. We'll take a short break and be back with you on Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah.
الشوق في مزيد والدمع قد جرى والدمع قد جرى لاحت أم القرى بدرا فوق الذرى لاحت أم القرى بدرا فوق الذرى
لبيك اللهم لبيك لبيك لا شريك لك لبيك إن الحمد والنعمة لك والملك لا
Welcome back to Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah with Nadia and Ola on the Muslim Community Radio 92.1 FM. The way we prepare for Hajj will determine how we will experience it. For millions of people all over the world, Hajj preparation usually happens in the weeks or months prior to their departure. Or if you're someone like me, perhaps I'm always delayed.
The night before.
The night before. Nevertheless, performing Hajj requires spiritual, physical, and financial preparation that really, Ola, shouldn't be underestimated.
Oh, of course not. The most important element to consider in preparation to perform Hajj is to equip yourself with the authentic knowledge pertaining to this obligation and how to perform it, as you alluded to earlier, Nadia. This isn't sought by merely reading books or visiting the internet. Rather, this is done by learning from a trustworthy, educated Muslim who has taken that knowledge from a trustworthy, learned Muslim, and so on.
I mean, why is acquiring the knowledge pertaining to Hajj very important, Ola? Well, number one, it will give you peace of mind in being able to differentiate between a valid worship and an invalid worship. As we mentioned earlier, you've paid a lot of money to perform Hajj. So don't let it go to waste by not having learnt how to perform the integrals and, of course, as we mentioned earlier, the requisites and so on. Naturally, if we don't equip ourselves with the authentic knowledge before we take off, we can easily get lost. We can easily lose confidence and get disoriented.
The next aspect of preparing for Hajj is physically preparing yourself for this trip of a lifetime. Hajj and Umrah require a great deal of physical exertion, which is why preparing your body with a balanced diet and effective training will help your body function at an optimal level. This compounded by the hot weather that we spoke about earlier,
yep,
and being among hundreds of thousands of other pilgrims at the same time, often in limited spaces, highlights the importance of being in good physical shape prior to your journey. A good level of exercise beforehand will really build up the body's resilience and stamina and trains it to withstand any physical hardships you may encounter.
And we mentioned, Ola, before that one of the easiest forms of exercise and one that you will be undertaking and doing a lot during your journey is actually walking. So you will be on your feet for quite some time. So walking is, I guess, an effective way of improving stamina, respiration and heart function, and it's less strenuous on the body than other exercises like swimming and running. Although, as we know, swimming is sunnah, so it's really advised to do swimming. In this case, you will be doing more walking than swimming at Hajj.
That's right.
It's really important to get your body moving and get your body back to how it should be so that you will be effectively performing Hajj at your optimal level.
Especially so that many of us do have sedentary lifestyles. I mean, we live in a country where we don't use walking as a very common method of getting out and about. We always like either driving or catching public transport, and we're very limited in how much walking we actually do. So the stamina, I mean, we can probably take a walk down the road without getting puffed, but, you know, anything beyond a half an hour walk is going to be quite taxing on our body. And over there, you will not be catching many taxis.
No.
There's a lot of traffic over there, and you wouldn't want to be catching any taxis, to be honest with you. It's a lot faster to walk and to get to places.
Yep.
So you will be expected to do long distance walking. And if you haven't built up the stamina to endure those kinds of walks, then you're going to get very, very tired. And if you're traveling in a group, you're going to be a letdown to the rest of your group if they all have to wait for you to catch up all the time.
Absolutely.
It's going to cause a bit of disruption to the activities of that group.
That's right. There's no harm in giving yourself a head start, and prior to your departure to perform pilgrimage, why not do some walking with a family member and get yourself moving so that once you're in Hajj, you will be able to properly function.
Or invest in a treadmill.
Yep, why not?
As well as walking, incorporate other exercises to help prepare you for your journey. Since you'll be walking a lot, it is important that you pay attention to your lower body muscles and hips. So incorporating a stretching routine which helps release tension in your hips and legs can be invaluable, especially if you're someone who's used to an office lifestyle. If you're overweight, you should also aim to lose as much weight as possible before your departure.
So this advice would be, I guess, important to people like ourselves, because we spend the bulk of our time in an office setting, sitting down and really not moving much. And the only time we're moving is if Ola needs to go pick up her paper from the printer, or perhaps if we need to go perform our prayers.
Or
that's about it.
Or if Ola needs to make her coffee.
How can we forget the coffee? Ola is always moving when there's coffee involved.
probably one of the best ways to get me moving.
I guess in Ramadan you're not really moving much, are you?
No. I'm very sedentary.
Look, in 2016, a 31-year-old architect from Bali, her name is Atika, she performed Hajj and she shared a few words of wisdom regarding what she recommends. She said she highly advises or highly recommends performing Hajj at a young age. And Ola, we mentioned earlier, you were among those who performed Hajj at a younger age. Although, as you mentioned to me, you did experience a lot of hardship because you were inflicted with so many illnesses there. So that really impeded your ability to do more than you wanted to.
But at the same time, I did experience a lot of hardship in terms of falling ill with various things while I was over there. But probably because of my younger age, I probably coped with it a lot better than somebody who maybe is older. So it is, I would also encourage people to go at a younger age when they do have their health still intact and they're still at, you know, in a physical sense.
That's right.
At their optimum. Because once the older you get, the harder things get for you. It takes you a lot longer to recover from illnesses as well. So it's always a good idea to think about going to perform an obligation like Hajj while you're in your peak, as they say.
And what's really upsetting is that I've come across people who've ignorantly told me or discouraged me from performing Hajj at a young age. So when I propose that I'm really interested in performing Hajj at this time of my age, they said, I don't think it's a good idea because you might commit sins again. But really, you know, once you perform Hajj, you know,
to give you more incentive not to commit sins because you don't want to undo all the good that you've done.
Exactly. So there are some people who think, oh, no, it's not a good idea to do so. But that's just an ignorant way of thinking. Rather, it's important to do so at a young age because you see so many young people coming back from Hajj and coming back to a new way of life. It really cleanses you.
That's right.
It restarts your life. So there's obviously a great deal of enthusiasm that many young people have when it comes to performing Hajj at a young age. So this lady said it's really important to perform Hajj at a young age. She said it's a great idea to start a cardio exercise routine a few months prior to the scheduled departure. She said a good amount of exercise really builds up the body's resilience, and that's very important for coping with fatigue and extreme weather conditions, as we mentioned. So usually fatigue and extreme weather conditions do not mix. So it's important to prep your body up to the optimal level, as we described earlier.
So she also recommends fasting and a balanced diet. Hajj falls only a couple of months after Ramadan, so the body is already accustomed to having less food.
Absolutely. And that's a very important piece of advice. She mentioned before and during the Hajj, make sure that we pay attention to the quality of our food. So eat less processed and fried foods. And I really feel, Ola, that when I consume a lot of processed and fried foods, I find I'm very lethargic. I'm full of fatigue and I just don't feel like moving. So it's greatly advised to have those healthy foods in your system, like fruits and veggies and protein. All that will really help you when it comes to the physical aspect of performing Hajj.
That's right. So again, the advice is reiterated. So before and during Hajj, make sure that we pay attention to the quality of our food, eat less processed and fried foods, and have more fruits and vegetables, which, you know, is really common sense. It's what we should be doing anyway, not just before Hajj, or, you know, it's just something, it's something that we should commonly take upon ourselves to have as part of our normal healthy lifestyle.
Exactly. And she mentioned that before you depart, it's really important to adopt a healthy, well-balanced diet. And as we mentioned, to try and eliminate foods that are detrimental to your health, which is very self-explanatory. Increase your consumption of plant foods such as fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and nuts, and limit your intake of fatty foods. Follow the example of the Prophet ﷺ in eating healthily and in moderation. I mean, what better example do we have than the Prophet alayhi salatu wassalam? And if we follow his way of living, ala, our lives will be just so much better. We have so many health experts advising us to do 1, 2, 3.
That's right.
When the Prophet alayhi salatu wassalam, so many years ago, told us and advised us.
He was the best example for us in terms of both our religious matters and worldly matters even.
Absolutely. So not only is a well-balanced diet beneficial to our physical health, but is also essential for our mental well-being. Sometimes in terms of the food that we eat, if they are detrimental to our health, what they end up doing is that it affects our mental well-being. So we become very agitated, we become very impatient with others. And as you know, Ola, when you are in Mecca and Medina, you need a lot of patience. And you're going to face obstacles, you're going to face people who don't have the same, perhaps, vision as you do. So there's going to be sometimes conflicts between certain people.
That's right.
So it's important to really train yourself mentally. And we will talk about the mental aspect, how to focus on gaining and earning that patience that will help you throughout your trip.
So yes, definitely, Nadia, as you say, there needs to be spiritual preparation for a trip like this. And when it comes to making the preparations for Hajj, many people put emphasis only on the physical aspects of the preparation. But while it is important, you should also spiritually prepare your heart to be cleansed by pre-adopting and exercising noble traits such as humility and patience, like you say. Yes, you will be surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people from all walks of life.
Yep.
Okay, these people have grown up maybe with different values to you, with different traditions to you. What is acceptable to you is not acceptable to them, and vice versa. Learn to get along in a place like that and have one thing in mind. You are there to perform an obligation for the sake of Allah.
That's
you
right.
have to learn how to let things slide, as they say. Even if you don't agree with everything you see, you just have to focus on the goal. Keep your eye on the ball and remember why you're there.
Exactly. Don't let other matters occupy you from performing this noble obligation. Some people become so embedded and entrenched in what people are doing and forget what, you know, they're doing as well and what they're lacking. So just focus on making sure that you perform a valid worship so that you can, you know, hopefully depart and farewell Mecca, return to your home feeling at ease, feeling peace of mind that you achieved something that's, of course, once in a lifetime.
Of course. But if you're a naturally impatient person, as I can be sometimes, it's good to kind of train yourself up to that. You're not going to become, an amazingly patient person overnight. So it does take some practice and teach yourself. And this is one of the things, again, that has been encouraged and by our beloved Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to exercise patience and to do it for the sake of Allah.
So patience is definitely key. As we know, you know, we all experience our own set of hardships in life. And this can be, I guess, a constant reminder that we need to truly rely on Allah Azza wa Jal in every aspect of our life. And the full realization of all these aspects is a part of how you can mentally prepare yourself for your trip to Hajj.
The next point we come to, Nadia, and I can probably not emphasize this point enough because I have seen a lot of people who do think of it as a summer vacation. If you think it is a summer vacation, Hajj is definitely not. Okay, it is an Islamic obligation and a life-changing journey. Developing your patience is undeniably an essential part of your Hajj experience. Whilst performing Hajj and Umrah, there is very likelihood that you will come across situations that will test your patience to varying degrees.
Well said.
Indeed. So from the quality of services and facilities, the inconveniences, the weather, the circumstances, the crowds, to the different unpredictable behaviours of others, it can all set you off at times. But again, you have to keep that goal in mind and keep in your mind that it is the trip of a lifetime. It's not a vacation, where, exactly, you know, you're going to experience luxury accommodation or fine dining experiences and all the rest of those things. You know, you have to be willing to compromise on some things. And you do, unfortunately, hear of a lot of people who sit there and whinge and whine about, oh, the hotel that we're in doesn't have have that. And, you know, oh, we're so far away from certain amenities. And
they complain about the food, the weather, the crowds, the bus, the beds, the bathrooms, the AC. You know, assuming that they are on an annual vacation trip, it's not a vacation, it's an act of worship.
It is an act of worship. Fulfill. And if you can't, how do they say, make yourself modest or practice humility in a situation like this.
They complain about everything under the sun, thinking that they're going to a five-star hotel
and,
in Mina.
And Nadia, but if you really think about it, even despite all these things, it actually is like a five-star vacation.
It's actually better than a five-star vacation.
If you want to compare it to the fact that, you know, many centuries ago, they didn't have any of this stuff. They didn't have hotels. They used to sleep in tents.
That's right.
They used to travel by camels and horses and convoys. They didn't have planes and buses and all the rest of it. So, you know, we need to get a grip.
For some people, Allah, the more they have, the more they complain.
It almost becomes a competition, Nadia.
Exactly.
I've seen it happen where, you know, oh, I'm staying in this place. Mm. Oh, really? Oh, because, you know, it's got this and this and this. You're not there to compete.
Absolutely.
Okay? If that's the reason you're there for the wrong reason.
Subhanallah. Focus on this priority. Focus on achieving a قد يقال five-star, you know, acceptance, or inshallah your deeds will be accepted. That's what you need to focus on, as a matter of fact. But for some people, they just think about, you know, the aspects pertaining to food,
to their convenience, basically.
That's right. So really start training your patience levels before you actually depart. Train yourselves to save up those huge bags of patience, which you will really need to cash out when you're at Hajj. So for some people, they'll be like, okay, I'll become patient when I'm there. But you need to practice patience beforehand. You need to really train yourself beforehand to make sure that you are practicing it properly.
Of course. So always remind yourself about why you've decided to make this journey. Firstly, to obey the orders of Allah. Also, to be reminded of the purpose of our existence in this world. Unlike most trips you'll take in your life, the goal of performing Hajj is not to attain any worldly gain. You are embarking on this trip with your time and energy to exert yourself for the acceptance of Allah Ta'ala.
And that's a very, very significant point, Ola, that, you know, when you perform Hajj, you are reminded about the insignificance of this dunya and to focus your priority on the hereafter. So it's not about attaining any worldly gain or acquisition. It's really about diverting your attention away from the pleasures of this dunya. And subhanAllah, when you see those Muslims from different parts of the world wearing the same, dressed in white, it's like it's symbolizing the shroud, when the Muslim passes away, they shroud him in that white cloth.
And not just that, Nadia, but you look at, and you know, there may be people of varying social statuses.
100%. There could be doctors, there could be mechanics.
And over there, subhanAllah, you can't tell a doctor from a lawyer from a person, you know, who cleans the streets.
Because usually you'd find
everybody looks the same and they're all there for one purpose.
Subhanallah.
And you know, everything else becomes insignificant, and that's how it should be, really.
Absolutely. So really focus your attention on achieving the acceptance of Allah Azza wa Jal. And also, Ula, part of preparing yourself for this journey is you are advised, the one who is leaving or about to leave to perform Hajj is to tie up any loose ends with their kin and fellow Muslim brothers and sisters. And this is something that's quite noticeable. This is something that's really common at this time of year when Muslims are about to embark on a trip of a lifetime. They send text messages to their fellow Muslim brothers and sisters, you know, asking them for forgiveness. And this is a good trait. So even if you are the one who has been wronged, it's important, it's advised to be the better person by taking the initiative to mend broken bonds. So take the time to send a message or make a phone call to your relatives asking for their forgiveness and put an end to any feuds that you may have. And this will really help you feel lighter as you lift the heavy burden of negativity from your heart. Push away those negative thoughts, Ola, and start fresh because you're about to go on a positive journey.
That's right, and it's a journey that will, inshallah, help you start fresh.
Inshallah.
As we've said many times, it is the experience of a lifetime. And what better way to capture it? I know there are you thinking of digital cameras and phones and smartphones and all that stuff. But I think one of the best ways to actually get in touch with your feelings, because while you may capture certain moments in digital form, you're not going to be able to capture the emotions.
No.
The best way, I think, to do that is to take a little notebook with you.
That's a good idea.
Take a little notebook with you. Make it like a little diary that you have while you're staying over there, just to write things down at specific moments of solitude, such as when you're sitting in the mosque of the Prophet or standing in front of the Holy Kaaba. Well, I don't know if you may have enough time to do that, but certainly in any moment of solitude that you have, is to sit down and reflect on those experiences that you have taken part in, and just reflect on how it's made you feel. And this will hopefully enable you to relive those moments when you return.
That's a great idea. You know what I find, Ola, with smartphones and just taking your phone to a holiday or a vacation or a trip to Hajj is that you're focusing on the screen.
That's
you're
right.
not actually focusing on the moment. Have you ever tried to just put your phone down and actually embrace the moment?
That's right.
And especially, I know a lot of people, you know, find that, oh, I want to take as many photos as I can in front of the Kaaba. You know, take a few shots, of course, no doubt, because you may never ever get the opportunity to visit Hajj again. But don't let it be your focus. Put your phone down and embrace the moment. And sometimes even just writing things down, reflecting on what you see, because sometimes just by looking at a photo, you won't necessarily be able to recall some of those emotions that you had those moments.
That's right. Nothing can help you get back in touch with your feelings than, you know, you actually describing to yourself what you're feeling. You know exactly how it made you feel. You know the smile that you had on your face when you were in a certain situation, you know, and it doesn't have the same feel, I think, or value as just like a photo moment.
That's right. So why not bring a notebook with you and enjoy those moments of serenity? In talking about other preparation tips in the lead up to departure. Make a checklist of the items you need to take with you, especially any items that you may not find easily overseas. And I mean, I don't really like the idea of people saying, oh, you know, I won't get anything with me because I can buy it over there. Well, you don't want to spend the bulk of your time shopping at a place like Mecca and Medina. So really try and get all your necessities with you, which is why you should write a checklist, especially things that you need, such as medication. That's something that you rely on. The checklist is very helpful to make sure that you don't forget to take necessary items with you, as we mentioned, like your medication, but also ensures that you don't leave anything behind upon your return.
It works as a reverse checklist either way.
Exactly.
It helps you to pack, and then it helps you to pack again when you're coming back.
100%. So if you are taking electronic devices with you, take a power adapter so that will enable you to use your chargers in the power outlets over there.
We also spoke so much about the hot weather over there. So my personal advice is to pack cotton-rich clothing in light colours, which is suitable for hot weather. And don't pack too much clothing if you intend on bringing back gifts for family and friends. We often get carried away and think we need, you know, piles and piles of clothing.
Yep.
Your wardrobe is not going to be your main focus over there. Believe
Absolutely
me, anything
not.
That's comfortable and helps you move around is going to be sufficient. So you don't need piles of clothing. And make sure that you're taking things that are not made of synthetic fabrics. Synthetics will make you burn up. Okay,
wow.
Don't take anything in polyester or nylon blends or any of that.
Yep.
Stick to your like rayons maybe or cotton, just basically cotton. Cotton is really good. It's a trans-seasonal fabric, so it keeps you both cool in summer and warm in winter. So it's a very, very good option for...
Very versatile.
It's a very versatile, yep, and it's very comfortable to move in as well. So keep away, like I said, from polyester or nylon, and don't opt for clothing that's too dark, because as they say, dark clothing can absorb sunlight and it can exacerbate heat. So try to stick to your neutral colors if you don't like, you know, very, very light colors, but at least something that's on the light side.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that you will do quite a lot of walking, which we mentioned repeatedly during today's episode. So invest in a pair or a few pairs of comfortable shoes, preferably something which is lightweight with a supportive sole and good cushioning.
Also, take a lightweight carry bag or backpack with you to put any items that you need with you while you are in the mosque, such as prayer mats, prayer clothing, and a bottle of water. It's also a good idea to take a plastic bag or a separate carry bag to put your shoes in, because as anybody knows, if you leave your shoes outside, there is a chance you will not find them again among the thousands of other pairs of shoes that you'll find outside. Or as it happened to me personally, if you happen to exit from a different door to the one you entered from. And I had to walk back home barefooted. So that's a lesson learned, and you should take my advice on that.
Will do, Ola. Well, that's it, inshallah. Those are the simple steps that will, I guess, help to enhance your spiritual and physical preparation for the great journey of Hajj and Umrah. So I hope that was beneficial, especially to those who will be embarking on, again, a trip of a lifetime, which is our favourite word or phrase today. Trip of a lifetime.
Trip of a lifetime. But there's no better way, I think, to explain it. Nothing says it better, because it is indeed, for those who have tried it and for those who will try it, inshallah, you'll definitely agree that it is, in fact, the trip of a lifetime.
Absolutely. Ola, I'd like to thank you immensely for your valuable, valuable company with me. And I'm definitely looking forward to the other episodes to come. We didn't get the opportunity to actually talk about what we have in store for our listeners.
That's right.
We'll just keep them on edge and hopefully keep them
in suspense.
Exactly.
For a bit longer.
Exactly.
Just for a little bit longer. But the pleasure was all mine, Nadia. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode and I wish to join you for many more.
Barakallahu fiq, Ya Ola. And thank you very much to all our listeners. You were tuned in to the first episode of Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah. Join us once again for the second installment of the show. Until the next time we reconnect on Reconnecting in Dhul Hijjah, please take care.